KNOM Update News. I'm Zachariah Hughes, and it's 9:02. Earlier this month, the Alaska Division of Homeland Security and Department of Military and Veterans Affairs put out a Request for Proposals, or RFP, for contracts to set up an emergency food system. McHugh Pierre is a deputy commissioner with DMVA. He says the food stockpiles are one part in Governor Sean Parnell's recent steps to shore up emergency response measures across the state.
They've included emergency power electric generation. It includes water purification. And the last part is having an emergency food cache in the state.
Food security is the ability to respond to emergencies, and by that measure, Alaska has a long way to go. According to Pierre, the logistics of food delivery are complex and contingent, especially in communities far off the road system.
There's a lot of supply line vulnerability in Alaska. We have remote communities, and our largest communities are remote from other major shipping points in the world.
And at the state level, natural disasters are the norm. On average, Alaska declares about 4 a year. Pierre says even though disastrous events register as exceptional when they hit communities, the state's response needs to function like a routine.
They happen to us on a regular basis. On average, we have a declared disaster every 90 days, and we shouldn't wait around and be surprised by something that's predictable.
The state's RFP is seeking three separate contracts, one for providing all the food that will be stored, and the other two are for storage itself, one facility near Anchorage and the other in Fairbanks. The state's plan is to stockpile enough food to feed 40,000 people, three meals a day for a full week, and the state doesn't want to use military field rations, like MREs, because at a shelf life of 3 years, they won't last long enough. DHS's contracts require foods that can last a minimum of 5 years, but ideally for a full seven. The RFP also calls for foods that meet the needs of children and the elderly instead of just soldiers. The current system of stockpiling durable food in hubs is the older industrial approach to food security, and in a state as spread apart and disaster-prone as Alaska, it may not be the best way of organizing emergency food systems. Darren Snyder works for UAF and is a governing board member for the Alaska Food Policy. He's happy with DHS's efforts, but says preparedness should ideally start with knowing what food communities can get to if cut off.
Communities don't have intentional amounts of food stored. We don't have any intentional amounts of food. So, you know, it would be luck of the draw. How much food is there stored in your community right now? What is your accessibility to the natural resources? If food stopped being shipped, doesn't that mean that fuel also would stop being shipped? And how will you harvest wild foods?
If multiple disasters were to compound food shortages in a crisis, or if weather kept DMVA from being able to access affected communities, then food stockpiled in Fairbanks and Anchorage would do little help. An alternate model, Snyder suggests, would have communities identifying foods that are consistently coming in and rotating them through locally maintained caches.
A community food cache system would be to increase the stocks of nutritionally qualified foods that are already coming through a community. They may come through a school lunch program or maybe just the stores, but just to increase the stocks of those foods to levels which address whatever that community's priority is for a certain number of meals.
At present, there is no way for assessing how much food a given community in Alaska has in it. Between freezers, stores, pantries, and community centers, nobody knows how long things could last if supply lines were suddenly shut down. And that not knowing, says Snyder, constitutes a hazard to local food security in its own right.
My belief is that a community-level intentional planning is the only way that we can be truly emergency food prepared.
The estimated budget for DHS's three contracts is $2.5 million in total. Oiling wildlife is a federal crime, so when the Coast Guard received a report that two dead, potentially oiled gulls were discovered off the coast of Gamble last week, they dispatched a C-130 from Kodiak to St. Lawrence Island the next day to investigate the area. Commander Sean Decker, United States Coast Guard Chief of Response at Sector Anchorage, says flying at low altitude, the aircraft surveyed roughly 500 square miles of islands, coast, and seawater. Trained oil observers and oil responders sat aboard the aircraft, but no oil product or discharge was observed during the flight. Meanwhile, scientists are examining one of the coated gulls at the National Wildlife Health Center in Wisconsin. There, they're determining the cause of death and testing the birds for avian cholera, which was recently found in dead seabirds on the island. The scientists are also verifying if the dark, charred-like substance found on the birds is in fact oil or some other material. If the substance is oil, then samples will be shipped to the Coast Guard Marine Safety Lab in New London, Connecticut for further analysis. And there the landscape will shift. The vicinity where the gulls were discovered will become a crime scene. The oil on the gulls will become a fingerprint to the culprit, and the Coast Guard will enter a crime investigation mode. The only problem is, with no oil detected on or off the coast of the island, no source currently exists to trace the fingerprint to. And with no source, no perpetrator.
Without an origin sample, like any other fingerprint, to where if you have a fingerprint that you take from a crime scene and a police department runs that against a known database of other fingerprints to have a match, the challenge right now is that we don't have a sample to compare the oil on the feathers to. So there's an unknown origin of where this oil came from.
The last time oiled wildlife was reported in Alaska was November 2012. In that case, the origin of the oil was never found, and the crime remains unsolved to this day.
And that's the challenge right now, is that all the reports that we're getting from the people on St. Lawrence and from our own Coast Guard overflights and our own investigation is that no oily product was observed in the water, no spill was observed, either on the beaches or that was in the water.
With oiled wildlife transgressing from an environmental hazard to a food security and public health threat, Commander Decker says the Coast Guard continues to work with the state and leadership on the island's two communities to monitor the situation. And the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority may begin the permitting process for the Ambler Road project as early as March. Tribes and individuals located along the road corridor naturally have differing views on the 220-mile road to the Ambler Mining District. The communities of Alakakat, Bettles, and Hughes all oppose the development, while some, along the Kobuk River, welcome the possibility of a lower cost of living and the jobs a road and a large mine would provide. Lorelei Kinnean reports from Shagnak.
The Traditional Council for the Native Village of Shagnak, IRA, voted to support the development of the road to Ambler.
Because they see possibly cheaper fuel, cheaper electricity, more private enterprises that they can start themselves, maybe to help this road go along.
Billy Lee has lived in Shagnak for 15 years and is the Native Village of Shagnak tribal administrator. He says the council does not want to stop progress, but he also says because the road goes straight to the Shagnak traditional lands, the council would like tribes to have some control, more studies done, and more community input.
Because we live here. We just don't want somebody just to drop in and do whatever they want. They should be asking us.
Lee says because Nana has an agreement with Nova Copper, the mining company has a subsistence committee.
We tell them when they can drill and when to stop. If the caribou migration is coming through, we can stop the project.
He'd like to see ADA also form a subsistence committee.
To have some kind of authority to say, hey, the caribou are coming, please, we're going to shut you down for a little while and let the caribou go on by, then you can resume. Because once the mine gets in and they start hauling, you're not going to slow them down. They're just going to haul and haul and haul. But if we have some kind of say of when you can haul, we would like to be able to do that.
Sally Custer is an ICWA worker at the Native Village of Shagnak offices. She says the main reason she is for the road project is to ease the cost of living in the community of 260 residents. Custer says everything, including fuel, needs to be flown into Shagnak. A gallon of heating fuel is $10.59. Custer says she purchases two drums of fuel a month. One drum costs $559.49. But Custer says she has real concerns. She's concerned about the Western Arctic caribou herd migration. She's concerned about the impact eventual access will have to the sheepfish people in her community and surrounding communities rely on. She's also concerned about more access for trophy hunters.
That's not the way of Inupiaq life. It is not.
And her concerns are not only toward outsiders. It's also for her tribe and the surrounding communities. Custer sees a real need for people, whether or not they agree on the road development, to come together.
If we're divided and things don't work out well, somebody's going to be the blame. And it will be me if I don't put my 2 cents in there. It'll be my own fault because I did not attend to hear what's going on, what's happening now, what's the next step. So I really do believe that we really do need to work together as one.
Custer and Lee both say, in general, the people in Shungnak are in support of the road to the Ambler Mining District. Reporting in Shungnak, I'm Lorelei Kinneen.
And checking in New York, the price of gold is up $1.20 to $1,232.30 an ounce. Silver's up 7 cents to $20.02 an ounce, and zinc is at 90 cents a pound. Alaska Airlines Flight 152 should arrive in Nome on time at 11:40 a.m. today. Unofficially, it's 10 degrees right now outside the KNOM studios, 13 minutes after 9 o'clock.